Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
I don't believe what I just saw.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. We have a jam-packed 3 hours coming at you in about 30 minutes' time from the Bergen County Record in New Jersey. Andrew Gross will be joining us to talk about the New York Rangers at 10:30 this morning from ESPNDallas.com. Mark Stepneski to talk about the Dallas Stars. And then at 11 o'clock, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. And at 11:15, Bill Hoppe of the Olean Times Herald to talk about the Buffalo Sabres. Did I just say James Myrtle's coming on to talk about the Buffalo Sabres?
I said Myrtle. You just skipped who Myrtle's going to be talking about.
Okay, because it sounded odd in my ears. Anyways, off to a rockin' start this morning. Joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air in the masterful job he always does. Richard, Ezra, hey now.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now, Drew. It's good to be back.
Ezzy, how are you? Have you recovered from your bout with scurvy?
I'm not at 100% now. I actually had a chest inflammation, so I'm getting better. Last week I just felt awful, but I was listening to the entire show at home, and you guys did an awesome job. Leah Hextall was very good on the show, and I'm glad to be back. I'm not at 100%, but I'm, you know,
way to play.
I'm at 90%.
Way to play injured. As
it was a playoff game.
Yeah, you know, your MJ's flu game. Way to give 110% here. We appreciate you coming in under the weather like that.
Yeah, me and Rick DiPietro are suffering from the flu, so.
And you have bad hips also, right? Just like Rick DiPietro?
No, my hips are good. I have my hips are fine.
Hips don't lie.
I have good hips.
Okay. Yeah.
The hips are good.
Okay, well, it's good. I'm glad that your hips are good. Richie, how are you this morning?
Good, Drew.
That's good. Let's start with last night. Let's recap last night in the NHL. We'll get a quiet night, quiet Friday night in the NHL last night.
A quiet night, and I was just telling you this before we got on air. I watched, you know, I've got center ice at home. I watched all of these games. Quiet night, but a very interesting night. The New York Islanders-Buffalo game, which you're going to get into in a second, that was probably the worst game. But that Tampa Bay-Florida game was actually kind of interesting. LeCavalier had a penalty shot there. But anyways,
yep.
I'm stealing your thunder.
You're not stealing my thunder. My thunder is always available for you to steal it. Don't worry about that. Well, might as well start in Florida last night, where Tampa Bay, in a shootout, defeated the Florida Panthers 2-1.
Explain to me why
it was interesting. You watched the game.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw the highlights or watched any of the game, but Vinny LeCavalier actually got a penalty shot with a minute left in overtime, which is very rare to get a penalty shot in overtime. But not only that late in overtime, but Brian Allen took him down. He didn't score, obviously, because the game went to a shootout. But there was a little bit of a controversy in the shootout on Dominic Moore's goal.
So the same move LeCavalier pulled back, he actually scored.
A similar move, you know, kind of just a
pull forehand.
Pull forehand, not anything that fancy. Dominic Moore, it actually turned out to be the winning goal. But there was a little bit of a controversy. They had to spend a couple minutes reviewing it because it looked like the puck hit Vokoun's pad, which would negate a shot. As soon as it hits the goalie's pad, regardless if you actually take a shot,
was there some concern that it was on a rebound that Moore scored?
Well, basically what happened is Dominic Moore on his deke, he was still following through going, the shot was basically going around Vokoun's pad, and on the way, it kind of touched his pad a little bit, but they counted the goal because the puck was still on Moore's stick. So it was actually an interesting finish to a shootout, Moore's second shootout winner in as many nights. But it was a very interesting game. I mean, Florida, for all their lack of talent, they kept the game close, and they're still within arm's reach of a playoff spot in the East. I don't think they're going to get in there, but they've been playing all right.
Right now they're 10th in the East. They're seven points behind a free-falling Atlanta team right now.
Not that I expect
Florida to make a comeback.
We'll speak about that, but think about that, you know, in terms of Florida. This is a team that's looking to rebuild. Dale Talon said as much, has added the likes of, you know, Quinton Howden through the draft, and has added Eric Goodbrunson through the draft, and John McFarland through the draft, and has Jakob Markstrom in the AHL. A lot of young talent there. The fact that they're playing this well right now is a testament more to Peter DeBoer than anything else, guys. And I know Florida, you know, they lost yesterday, and Dominic Moore scored the shootout winning goal for the second game in a row. having said that, I mean, Florida right now is a team that is really, really, really competing well. And Rick Dudley, I'm working on that piece I told you for ESPN. And Rick Dudley.
Shameless plug.
No, but Rick Dudley, what happened was I'm collaborating with somebody else. And there's a bunch of quotes from Rick Dudley. And the person I'm collaborating with, Bill Weisbrod, spoke to Rick Dudley. And Rick Dudley actually talked about the Southeast Division and how teams like Florida, who people thought were rebuilding, are actually playing far better than people expected, and they're tough out every night. In the Southeast, I don't think any team is under 500. And I say that showing you guys the quote sign, because in reality...
You mean our listeners can't see you making the quote sign right now?
Because the truth is, I mean, 500, what does that actually mean? A lot of
in
teams...
Every team in the NHL is 500.
Right. Only six teams, I think, are under 500, so... Yeah.
Well, if you look, I have been, obviously, because for the purposes of the show, but if you look at the standings right now, there are only six teams that are actually out of it.
Right.
Out of 30 teams, you know, most NHL teams now are at the 45 to 50 game mark. And there are only six teams that are out of it. You've got the Islanders, you've got the Devils, you've got the Leafs, you've got the
Senators. That's it.
And five teams.
Five teams, not six. They're out of it. And there are certain teams that people are just expecting to go away. Like every year you expect the Florida Panthers to go away. They haven't made the playoffs post-lockout, neither have the Leafs. But the Panthers are pretty significant in that respect. But you know what? They've got a lot of good young players. And they're losing games, but they're losing close games.
They're competitive.
And that means that they're only a few years away from being a playoff team.
They're competitive. So that's a first good sign for the Florida Panthers, a first good sign that franchise has had in a lot of years. Anyways, let's keep going with the last night's games. As you mentioned, in Buffalo last night, just an embarrassing loss on home ice. The Islanders go into Buffalo and they beat the Sabres 5-2. We'll talk to Bill Hoppe of the Olean Times Herald about the Sabres later on. You just can't lose the Islanders on home ice. Period.
Yeah, that was a really, really snooze filled game. Buffalo was coming off of a win against Boston, and then they came home and played awful.
They thought just by showing up they could beat the Islanders, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not that good, and the Islanders obviously played with a little bit of jump or whatever, but, you know, that's embarrassing. Speaking of embarrassing losses on home ice, Montreal 7, Ottawa 1 in the nation's capital last night.
Considering Montreal's kind of looking forward to that Saku-Koivu game tonight.
Yeah. And you thought they might have been overlooking that game against Ottawa.
Ottawa's packed it in.
Yeah. Now, I mean... Maury Cloustin survive the rest of the year?
Maury and Cloustin aren't surviving the rest of the year. They're both gone. If one's fired, the other will be fired.
Are they going to be responsible for whatever happens to this organization at the trade deadline? You know, 6 weeks away, less than...
good question. I don't know.
Just under 5 weeks away, actually.
Eugene Melnyk's fairly unpredictable in his decisions.
If Cloustin doesn't get fired, and if they don't get fired after this game or this game last night... Well,
there's been a lot of those games, though.
I know there have. Toronto, when they lost 6-0 on home ice, everybody thought that was going to be the game.
Right.
You know, they've survived so far. And then the final game last night in Calgary, sort of an old 1980s score, 7-4 Calgary beating the Dallas Stars. And we'll have Mark Stepniski of the ESPNDallas.com to talk about the Stars later on in the program. You know, good win for the Flames after they were embarrassed on national television on Wednesday night.
First loss for the Stars on the road in 9 games.
The
Flames, that is right, Drew. It's a good bounce-back game for them. Jerome McGinley, 20 goals for, I think, 12 consecutive years. I don't think that's been done before. It's a class guy. In terms of Dallas, you know, they've been, tempting fate lately. They've certainly aren't a team that necessarily controls the puck all the time. And the game, even against Edmonton, they had a fair amount of shots against. I believe they were outshot. So against Calgary, they were maybe due for a loss. And they put in Andrew Raycroft, who is, I bet you that the best goalie in the AHL is better than Andrew Raycroft by probably more than a small margin. Significant margin, yeah.
Okay, and then, so that was it for last night's games. Today in the NHL, really what I would call the marquee game, a good test to see if Chicago really is on their way back to being a Western Conference powerhouse.
We'll save that for the six things this week.
We'll talk about that, Chicago's future this year. Mm-hmm. But Chicago at Detroit, a good test for the Blackhawks, and banged up Detroit team just mm-hmm. riddled with injuries. They'll know by that time if they have successfully claimed of getting Nabokov or not. But we'll talk about all that later. But that's the game to watch for today.
Mm-hmm. Drew, there's one other big game tonight. It's Koivu's return to Montreal.
That's true. I'm talking about it in terms of on ice.
Okay, yeah.
Quality of play. I mean, Koivu returning to Montreal will be emotional. I think this game will be in terms of...
A better game, sure.
A better game on ice.
Yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, in terms of emotion, Koivu returning to Montreal. It'll be interesting to see the ovation he gets.
I think a great ovation.
I think you'll get a great ovation from the fans, but this is a guy who the media really... picked on unnecessarily throughout the last couple years there in Montreal.
Watching the game, right?
Yeah, of course. You're not going to hear what the French media have to say about him.
I have to agree with Richie, though. As far as tonight goes, I'm looking forward to that Anaheim-Montreal game. And you know what? I think it's time. For me, the novelty's worn off with Chicago winning the Cup. The way they've played this year, I realize that it's Chicago-Detroit and it's defending Stanley Cup champion versus, you know, a team that basically has won tons of Stanley Cups dating back to the mid-90s. But, I mean, Chicago this year, I don't think Chicago is going to make it to the Final Four this year, so to speak.
I really think that they
I wouldn't write them off that quickly, Ezzy. I really wouldn't. I mean, there's a lot of talent there.
I'm not writing them off quickly. I've written them off.
That's why I think this is a good test for them, because, you know, there's always going to be a cup hangover. You're not going to usually start the season, you know, like a house on fire, because you've played more games than anybody else except for the. So I wanted to see them. They're getting their legs behind them. A lot of turnover. This will be a good test to see if they're ready to enter back into the Western Conference echelon.
Fair enough.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the LA Kings ripping of the NHL front office. We're going to talk about Peter Forsberg's potential return to the Colorado Avalanche. Lots to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. We are a fully interactive show here on Sports Radio 1290. We'll be taking some calls in the next segment or two. But for now, why don't you log on to www.illegalcurve.com. Join the live chat going on there. Michael Remus, in charge of the R desk, is facilitating that chat. He's got show links. He's got interesting articles. He's got video. Everything you want from a hockey show is available while simultaneously listening to this fine radio station at www.illegalcurve.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/illegalcurve. Let's start with the Los Angeles Kings and their management going ballistic on the NHL head office.
Specifically Dean Lombardi.
Thursday night. In case you missed it, and of course the video is available at www.illegalcurve.com, a controversial goal was allowed after video review. To anybody really watching the game and watching the five-minute delay it took to review the goal, there is no way that goal should have been allowed. I'll explain what happened. 6'6" forward for the Phoenix Coyotes, whose name?
Martin Hanzel.
Thank you. Martin Hanzel, who was standing in front of the Kings net, batted down a shot after it was deflected. He was clearly over the crossbar. There's no way the goal should have stood. It was a 0-0 game at that time. And the refs on ice ruled it a goal, which is fine. You know, and then they went to video review. And that's why you have video review. To me, it looked pretty clear cut.
It was, Drew. It was clear cut. This was not a goal. This was a high stick. This is, forget how tall the player is. The stick was over to the crossbar, and he put it in the net. It wasn't a goal. It was clear, no goal. And as he said, he was watching the game. Jim Fox was saying,
color guy
on this show.
Yeah, color guy for the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah, and multiple-time guest on this show, as was saying that, hey, no goal. Clearly no goal, and he was shocked, like many have been, that this was actually called a goal.
Right, and the reason he was shocked was because it was so obvious. And right after the call was made, you know, Jim Fox, who is a very respectable guy, and we are obviously a huge fan of his, he said that's for sure going to be called off. And then as they were getting their video reviews from their broadcast, they just kept saying like, yeah, this is obvious. This is obviously going to be overturned. But
they drew a line from the crossbar to where, you know, with the crossbar being as high as you can hit the puck, to where the Martin Hanzel was and where his stick was, and it was a clear, you know, foot and a half over the crossbar. Mm-hmm. There was no question about it. The best part is, I mean, the controversial part, I mean, you know, mistakes get made on the ice. The best part of the whole thing was Dean Lombardi, general manager of the Los Angeles Kings, going absolutely ballistic after the game with the following quote. When the guy in Toronto making the decisions on the goals in Ottawa and the one tonight, previously they had a goal mm-hmm. called back against them in Ottawa, wanted the general manager's job in Los Angeles and was not happy that he didn't get it, you have to assume you're going to get these type of bad calls. you know.
Well, you know, when you make a comment like that, like Dean Lombardi did, Dean Lombardi's got a bit of a temper, as you can tell. You're gonna get fined. You know you're gonna get fined. And as soon as he said it, he knew he was gonna get fined. He called Mike Murphy the next day to apologize.
Mike Murphy being the guy who wanted, he's a former LA King. He wanted the LA Kings general manager job. He didn't get it. He's now the
Lombardi did.
Yeah, Dean Lombardi did. He's now the director of hockey operations. He's really in charge of reviewing every goal in the game. Look, I think that I don't for a second think that Mike Murphy is corrupt or anything along those lines, but he should have to, you know, to some degree, he should have to justify his awful call in that game.
That's one thing I agree with that, Drew. But, I mean, if you're Dean Lombardi, you can say that in the back room. You can go call the NHL and yell at them and say that. You can yell at Mike Murphy about that. You can yell at Colin Campbell about it. You can yell at whoever you want about it. But you can't go out and publicly state that. You know you're going to get fined. He got fined $50,000.
$50,000, which is in terms of the NHL is a significant fine.
I think it's funny that the NHL, you know, we'll talk about this later, but Curtis Glencross hits somebody from behind, gets fined $2,500 for putting a guy in danger, in safety.
It's ridiculous.
Danger.
And that was, we were watching that game, and all three of us were, and Remus too, Remus was there, the four of us were watching that game and all said, well, that's got to be a suspension. It was a textbook hitting from behind.
He got $2,500 fine, and this is Dean Lombardi making a comment like that and gets $50,000. No, that's disproportionate in my opinion.
Well, I have no problem with the NHL fining Lombardi $50,000. When you call into the integrity of the game's off-ice officials into question, you know you're going to get a big fine. And I think a $50,000 fine is, you know, reasonable, in quotes. But it's just another example of how the NHL has such a focus on the wrong issues often.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
perception as opposed to player safety.
That's right. I mean, you know, Lombardi, because everybody who watched that game understands where Lombardi's frustration comes from.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was a clear no goal. Like, you know, the NHL, they said, there's no conclusive evidence that the puck hit Hansel's stick. Well, I'm telling you, if that wasn't conclusive evidence, I don't know what conclusive evidence is.
That's what I wanted to mention quickly about that call, about the conclusive, this business of conclusive evidence. Because, you know, for those who haven't seen the play, basically, a shot came from the point, and Matt Green, defenseman for the Kings, who was covering Hansel in front of the net, in front of Jonathan Quick, he takes a swipe at it as Hansel's stick is coming down backhanded, his stick obviously from a high position. And when the NHL reviews these calls and the goal is already allowed, they have to overturn the call. Right, and to overturn the call, there has to be evidence to overturn the call. And in this case, what they said wasn't conclusive, Drew, doesn't make sense because it was clearly hit by high stick. So if they still stick behind this call, and as far as I'm concerned, the NHL should admit that they made a wrong call here because these are big calls. And
this
was a game, it
was a 0-0 game at that point in time.
In the
second period, the LA Kings are a team that is desperate for all. They've been struggling to score goals, you know. Shirt collars in LA are obviously very tight. I mean, everybody's feeling a lot of pressure. That there's a lot of high expectations in LA this season, and right now the Kings are scuffling, to put it mildly, in 12th place in the Western Conference. When it's a 0-0 game, you're dominating the opposition as the Kings were at that point in time. They were outshooting Phoenix significantly, and then Phoenix gets this bonus of a goal. You have a justification to be angry. And the NHL head office is so sensitive and so emotional and so fragile that they don't have the confidence to, after the game, stand up and say, yes, we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. If they had said, yes, we made a mistake, then this goes a little bit away. But Lombardi's saying there, well, what, you know, this, we're having trouble. Explain to me how that's not a goal. I want a justification. How is that not a goal? Don't tell me there's no conclusive evidence, because it was clear it hit the stick. The puck moved when it hit the stick. I mean, it hit Hansel's stick and it moved. You know, Mike Murphy, credibility coming out of the wazoo, is he incompetent?
I wouldn't say he's incompetent.
Well, how do you define competence if this is a no goal?
And, I mean, you know, what's been brought up in the aftermath of this, Richie, is that now people are starting to say that this idea of a challenge isn't that bad of an idea. The idea that Panthers GM Dale Tellen brought up about a challenge might have helped in the situation.
Why would a challenge help? They went to review.
This is why. You're going to go back to the review anyways.
This is why. Because now video review is in the hands of the on-ice officials at the game. as opposed to the control center. And I, to be honest with you, I know that, you know, we don't have time to get into, I don't have a big time to get into this, lots of time to get into this story, but I think that the idea that a central location is reviewing these goals is a problem. I think that these goals...
I disagree with that. I don't have a problem with that.
I'll argue, and then you can disagree with me. I think that waiting 5 minutes, you know, you're watching the game in L.A., everyone's sitting there waiting for, you know, the big decision to come from headquarters. There's enough qualified people that they can make the decision. Someone could look at it. I realize that the war room has
30 angles. Yeah,
I realize they have 30 angles, but if they have 30 angles, Rich, how are they still getting it wrong?
Well, that's my question. You don't need 30 angles.
But help.
One angle there was enough to show you.
Maybe I'll apply for a job with Mike Murphy. That's what I'm saying.
If Jim Fox, you know, on his telestrator was able to articulate why and demonstrate why it shouldn't have been a goal.
Let me get into that for 1 second, because the truth is, with the angle sometimes of the camera, it's a little bit deceiving in terms of where the puck is in respect to the crossbar. It's similar, you know, you have the overhead camera, it's a little bit in front of the net.
Yeah.
It's not, you have to see this, but the puck sometimes isn't actually...
I understand that the camera angle, the camera can play a little bit of tricks. Yeah. And if it's really close, I understand that. Even close, though.
Let's get to Forsberg.
Okay, let's get to Forsberg, because this wasn't close. This is just a bad call by Mike Murphy in the NHL and the NHL.
We're gonna fine you in a second, Drew.
You're gonna fine me?
Yeah.
Okay. How much are you fining me?
$2,500.
Great. So I can hit you from behind after the show. Awesome. Anyways, Peter Forsberg, apparently we've gone back in time now.
Right.
Is skating with the Colorado Avalanche as of this afternoon, and is going to see how his surgically repaired foot and ankle and everything else responds, and could be in the Avalanche lineup in the next couple weeks. Anybody see this coming?
No, I didn't see this coming. You know what? Adrian Dater of the Denver Post has already written, I think, 700 articles about Forsberg's return so far. Go to his blog on the Denver Post website.
All things Avs.
All things Avs. He's already written about it. And you know what? I saw this and I'm like, okay, you know, Forsberg isn't going to come back. But, you know, Adrian Dater seems to think there's a chance he will. He's quoted a few people in Sweden who are very close to Forsberg, and they're saying that Forsberg hasn't felt this good in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm not saying that Forsberg's going to come back. I'm just saying that insiders in the hockey world, and, you know, Adrian Dater knows more about the Avalanche than anyone, and he's on top of it, and he's starting to... Obviously, Adrian Dater's written so many articles about Forsberg coming back. Listen, guys, Forsberg was going to come back last year, too.
That's my question. Why is this comeback or any different? Like, what could have happened?
What happened,
Drew?
What I'm trying to tell you is, and my source on this is Adrian Dater. He is saying that Forsberg hasn't felt this good in 3 years. His foot is feeling good, so he wants to give it a shot. He wants to skate with the team and see if he actually still has it. And regardless if it actually happens, I think it's positive news for hockey fans.
Look, I have no problem with Forsberg attempting a comeback. I'm skeptical that he's going to be able to pull it off at this point.
Truth is, guys, Forsberg at 75% is certainly a valuable NHL commodity. What we don't know is health. We can debate that all we want, but you know, it's very unclear as of now of how he actually feels. And you always hear conflicting reports as to if he's feeling good or not good, the best his foot felt, the best his foot hasn't, or the worst his foot has felt. Whatever it may be, remember this, guys. 2.5 years ago, Forsberg comes back, plays 9 games again for Colorado before the playoffs. Let me tell you something about those 9 games. He was as good, if not better, than Paul Stastny, who was their best player that year. He didn't skate as well, but his vision is amazing. On the power play, he's exceptional. He's one of the best passers of all time. He can still protect the puck well. In the playoffs that year, he was an integral part of the team's upset of Minnesota Wild, and then many people, including Pierre Maguire, picked them to beat Detroit. And they got killed by Detroit, I think, in 4 games, if not 5. I don't recall exactly how many it was. Forsberg can still be an impact player because his hockey sense is so far beyond anybody else.
Giddy up.
Do you think that,
So, Drew, that's 2-1, Drew.
Well, obviously...
Forsberg is back, baby.
I don't think he is. I mean, I'd love him to be back.
We don't know if he's back or not. What I'm saying is, if he is back, nobody can project how he's going to play because of his health. But I'm telling you, him at him at 50% or above is a valuable commodity, especially with the Avalanche losing Thomas Fleischmann to the pulmonary embolism, which is scary to have to lose somebody of his age to pulmonary embolism.
I think that if Peter Forsberg can play, it's nothing but good. I'm just...
You're skeptical, and you should be. We're all skeptical.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, do you fly to Colorado for no reason? If you don't feel good enough in Sweden, why would you even fly to Colorado?
It just might... Yeah, listen, I think he could come back, and if he is at 75 or 80 or 85%...
Dater made a good point this morning. You know, his ankle is bothering him. You know, Forsberg, his ankle could be bothering him today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow he pulls a groin.
That's right. I mean, you never know. I mean, people are Forsberg's not as old as people think.
He's only 36.
He's only 37 now.
Okay.
But I mean, you think Peter Forsberg, I know. Mike Vernon and Patrick Waugh having a brawl at center ice, and those guys are about 70 now.
Yeah.
I mean, so you know, this is surprising that Forsberg. I mean, it just goes to show you how dominant he actually was, and at such a young age when the Abs were in their heyday. That's when he was in his heyday.
Rookie of the year.
Yeah.
95. Yeah.
Something like that. So you know, that's listen. It's only a good thing for hockey if Peter Forsberg can come back and contribute in a meaningful way.
And it's going to be good for Colorado Avalanche fans. That arena is going to be packed if
he
comes back.
Good point. If he does come back, let's see the impact of the tickets because they can't sell 12,000 the other night. Dater came on this show and said they can't sell any tickets. If Forsberg comes back, does that suddenly boost their ticket sales?
That'll be an interesting thing to watch happen. Let's go to break. When we come back, Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're thrilled to be joined online now by Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record. He covers the New York Rangers. Andrew, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Andrew. Thanks for joining us this morning. Andrew, go ahead.
No, I just said my pleasure. It's good to talk to you again.
Excellent. Andrew, let's start with the injury bug. It has been biting the Rangers, and it bit them again this week when the team lost to Brandon Dubinsky. To a stress fracture in his left leg. Sort of a two-part question here. Does the team have any optimism that Dubinsky will be able to return earlier from this stress fracture? And then second part, can you update us on Ryan Callahan's injury status?
I'll start with Ryan Callahan. That's the easiest one. He's been cleared to skate with a stick. He's clearly targeting the first game back from the All-Star break, which is February 1st, ironically, against the Penguins, because he broke his hand blocking Chris Letang's shot. So he hopes to be back against the Penguins on February 1st. All signs so far are that he's going to meet that goal. If you talk to Brandon Dubinsky, now the Rangers said Doobie would be out 3 to 4 weeks. I spoke to Brandon as he was leaving the Garden the night that the press release came out saying he was going to be out. He said basically as soon as he's pain-free, he's good to roll. And he was hoping it was going to be closer to 1 to 2 weeks. That may be optimistic. He said the issue is right now they just have to play it conservative. It's a stress fracture. He's been playing through it, it turns out, and he said he could continue to play through it right now. If this was the playoffs, he said there'd be no issue right now. He would be out on the ice. However, what the doctors have told him is he would be running the risk at this moment if, you know, he got a puck off the leg or if he hit it wrong, of the leg actually shattering in a much worse fashion, possibly needing a pin in the leg. So they just recommended he rested for a little bit and allow it to strengthen itself up. So the team's saying 3 to 4 weeks. Doobie's hoping for 1 to 2 weeks.
Andrew, Marian Gabrick went off this week and had 4 goals against the Toronto Maple Leafs AHL franchise. he's had his spurts. He's had his 4-goal games or his hat trick, whatever it may be. But what's been the reason he really hasn't gotten on track consistently this season?
You know, Dave Maloney was asking me that same question. I was on at intermission, and, you know, he did have a separated shoulder earlier this year. There's no indication from either Gabby or the team that there's any lingering effects from that shoulder. You never know. I mean, you saw what Jaromir Jagr went through after, you know, he hurt his shoulder, where it was the whole next season where he just wasn't right. So possibly, and just speculating here, maybe he's just not playing at 100% strength. But it sounds wacky to say, I think the real issue right now, and Gabby has said this too, is his confidence. He's just not going out there and playing the way you would expect a Marian Gabrick to play, which is fluidly, which is, you know, just knowing that if he's taking the shot, he should be beating the goalie. Sometimes backing off a little bit instead of going forward. He's just not playing like a guy who's an elite player in the league right now. You know, you mentioned his goal spurts, and yeah, it was 4 goals against the four goals against the Maple Leafs, and the next night against stiffer competition, the Hurricanes, who are a much superior team to the Maple Leafs. You know, Gabby, a decent first period, but other than that, kind of invisible as the whole team was. In fact, if you look through Gabby's season, he had three goals and a huge win over the Edmonton Oilers.
Right.
That was a whitewash where Edmonton kind of, you know, just like Toronto did the other night. I mean, you know, midway through the second period, you knew that game was over, and Edmonton had kind of, you know, just went for the body instead of trying to compete there. He had a hat trick against the Islanders, who at the time, you know, were not playing well. And he has four against the Maple Leafs. So that's 10 of his 15 goals against three of the not-so-great teams in this league.
How would you rate the play of new acquisition Vojtech Volsky so far?
It's a learning process for him, and I hate to use that because that's how Coach John Tortorella has brainwashed all his players to talk about everything. But it really is. He came in here with this notion that what Torts was trying to coach was just this crazy, you know, European free flow skating, everyone rush the net, don't worry about defense system. And it took him about a game or two to realize that that's, you know, yes, Torts wants to be aggressive, but, you know, defense is stressed first on the team. And, you know, that's something that Woolley is trying to grasp in his game. It's not really a big part of his game. He's all about up ice and attacking the net and being pretty in the offensive zone. But they're asking him to be a grittier player here, and it's going to be a huge adjustment for him. He seems right now to have settled decently onto a line with rookie Derek Stepan and rookie Matt Zuccarello, and the three players seem to be complementing each other nicely. Again, defense was awful in Carolina on Thursday, and Volsky didn't help there. But if he can just show a little bit of defense, yeah, I think he's going to be a nice addition for the team.
We're joined on the line by Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record.
Andrew, the Rangers are sixth in the NHL in preventing goals, and that obviously has something to do with Henrik Lundqvist, we'll ask you about in a second. But can you speak to the shutdown pairing of Mark Stahl and Daniel Girardi? And maybe, you know, is it possible, we've spoken about this when you had you on a couple of months ago, is it possible this team is, sorry, this combination is underrated playing in the spotlight of New York City?
I think it's very possible they're underrated. The team and certainly Henrik Lundqvist know how important these two are, and certainly Torts knows how important they are. And these guys have been getting, you know, just huge minutes. You know, Brian Leetch-like minutes in games. You know, Stahl is, you know, touching, you know, 28 minutes on a regular basis here. And Dan Girardi, too. In fact, the two of them had a really bad game in Carolina on Thursday, and you could see it was a really bad game because it was in such contrast to the way they've played the rest of the season. But yeah, they're underrated. I mean, there's no other way around it. Mark obviously is an all-star. Dan has, you know, from being an undrafted guy mm-hmm. who's just fought his way through the system, has, I mean, he's a legitimate top two defenseman now, particularly when you talk about, you know, the defensive side of things, which is, you know, something the organization and even Dan probably could have never dreamed when he, you know, first started this journey.
You know, in my opinion, the Rangers have definitely taken a step forward and are more of a contender this year, you know, but they're still showing signs of inconsistency. But, you know, one guy that is pretty much consistent every night and brings it every night is Henrik Lundqvist. You know, Lundqvist is basically making a Vezina push this year. You know, do you think that, you know, it's the talk about Lundqvist and, you know, him being a Vezina contender is going to pick up a little bit more, you know, as people start to realize how good his numbers and how good his play's really been?
Well, particularly if the Rangers are able to survive this little stretch here where, you know, so many of their players are injured. One guy, we talked about Doobie. The same night we learned that Doobie was going to be out, Ruslan Fedotenko goes out. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, he sprains his left shoulder, and, you know, you can't discount what that absence means. But, yeah, Henrik, he's had a few goals that he's admitted he's wanted back, but then again, what goalie doesn't? And it's just the confidence the Rangers have with him on the ice. And, yeah, you know, he's been certainly been a Vezina candidate before. I think, what is it, three times already in his career? Mm-hmm. He's been a finalist, I believe, if my memory serves me. And he's certainly one of the best five goalies in the league. I mean, Cam Ward was spectacular the other night. Tim Thomas is playing out of his mind. There is certainly, you know, out in the West, there are very good goalies. Hiller, you know, all the all-star goalies, mm-hmm. and, you know, Hank's certainly in the conversation, you know, for top five and potentially top three.
The deadline's, you know, just over a month away, Andrew, and Glenn Sather isn't never really been shy to make some moves, going back to, obviously, to his Edmonton days, although he's been in New York for, feels like, forever now. The Rangers have just, you know, approximately just under $2 million in cap space, although that kind of changes daily. Do you see the team making a move at the deadline, and if so, what do you see them addressing?
Well, I think they're going to make one more move. It could be that Volsky turns out to be their major move, sort of like last year when their major move was before the deadline, they bring in Olli Jokinen, and it turns out the key part to that deal was Brandon Prust.
Mm-hmm.
Their two priorities right now are they traded away Michael Roosevelt out of necessity to get Volsky because Alex Frolov got hurt. They still need probably a veteran defenseman back there. Because their defense corps is just so young. Yeah, you got, you know, even Stahl and Girardi are both young guys. It probably wouldn't hurt to have veteran presence back there. And I know if they can get this, but they're still, I mean, and this has been since Gabby got to New York for last season, they're still searching for a number one center, a guy who can really spark Gabby's game. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that through the trade market just because the organizational philosophy is not to give up on these young guys, you know, and certainly players, you know, that would be asked for, you know, Dubinsky, Callahan, guys like that, the Rangers just do not want to part with. So I don't know if they'd be able to, you know, put together a package for a number one, like, you know, guy, but that's certainly a need for them.
Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game in Atlanta tonight.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's go to break with me. When we come back, we're going to talk about some injuries around the NHL. You know, we just talked about the Rangers injuries. The Habs got bit by the injury bug. Thomas Fleischman.
There's a lot of injuries
you mentioned.
Right now.
Lots going on in the injury front. We'll discuss that. We'll take some calls as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:45 in the morning. We just heard from Andrew Gross of the Bergen County Record. We're going to go through some injuries around the league, some news and notes, and we're going to be taking your calls for the next few segments, 780-1290. That's 780-1290 if you want to be heard about anything in the hockey world. Give us a call. Michael Remus is anxiously awaiting your call. Let's talk about some of the injuries. The big one is really happened to the Canadians, Mike Camilleri. Separated his shoulder. Out for a month. What does Camilleri's injury mean to the Habs?
Yeah, obviously a huge injury, Drew. I mean, that's, you know, stating the obvious here. But this is a team that doesn't have that much in terms of pure scorers. And Mike Camilleri is their best pure scorer. Let's be real here. I mean, Gionta can score. Plekanec can score. Gomez can't, really. They have some other guys who've been contributing. But this is a team that, isn't exactly tearing it up. They're 24th in the National Hockey League in terms of goals per game with 2.58. When you lose a guy like Mike Camilleri, who's a 30 to 35 goal scorer on a team that's on the bottom third of the league in terms of goal scoring, it's a significant loss.
Ezzy, how do you see Montreal being able to handle this injury?
Well, Montreal, it's amazing. I didn't realize that they were 24th. I knew that they weren't top 10, but
they can play Ottawa every night. It'll be easy.
24th is bad, yeah. Scoring 7 goals against Ottawa proves that they can obviously score a lot against a really bad team. Camilleri was struggling. Camilleri hasn't had a good year this year. His playoff success from last year has not carried over. He shoots a lot, and it's not like he hasn't played well. He just hasn't got the results. He hasn't finished, and it's been well documented in Montreal. I think he only has 13 or 14 goals, obviously before his injury, something like that. But Montreal has a lot of guys that are at 10 to 15 goals. So it is significant. And when you've got the injuries that they have on the back end, and you know the struggles that certain guys have had, like Gomez, for example. And you know Gionta, even though he's been better lately, he's only got 16 goals and you know 3 points or whatever. So it's not exactly like the guys that are scoring are tearing it up. So it's definitely significant. But I think Montreal should be fine because they play well as a team, and I think they've got guys, you know, like the Pouliot and the Desharnais, that they're not going to tear it up. But they've got enough depth that I think they'll be all right. I don't see this, you know, leading to a big slide for them. I don't think they're gonna, you know, miss the playoffs here.
He's got 31 points in the year in 44 games, but that's not necessarily his talent level, guys. And he's a very talented player, and he doesn't lead the league team in goals. You said Gionta has 16, but let's be honest, he's the best pure scorer on the team. You're gonna talk a little bit later about Benoit Pouliot and the ability you think he has, but I think this team is taking on the attitude and the. Just the overall style of play that Jacques Martin really is wanting to instill in them. And in that case, I'm not so sure, you know, they're going to miss him, obviously, but will they miss him, you know, as much as maybe they would under a different style of play? Maybe not.
You're saying that their depth and their sort of ability to rely on scoring from all sorts of different lines on any given night could help them in this case.
As bad as they are offensively, they're fifth place in the National Hockey League in preventing goals. And obviously, Carey Price has a lot to do with that, but make no mistake about it. The style of play that is employed by Jacques Martin is defense first, offense second. And, you know, that's become a cliche, you know, in many circles because that's basically what every coach says. But Jacques Martin is one of those collapse coaches. Everybody collapses to the front and the middle, and you even collapse below the invisible ringette line that many, you know, hockey arenas have. And there's five guys below that line, and you have to get the puck through traffic. And, you know, there's less of a reliance there on individual skill. So I think this team can withstand it over the long term. It's 3 to 4 weeks. If it was longer than that, I'd say it'd be a really, really big loss. But 3 to 4 weeks, I think this team can withstand it for that short period of time.
Tread water for the next month or so, and then maybe make a run, start picking it up as you get closer to the crunch time. 780-1290, that's 780-1290 if you want to get in on the conversation here. Moving to St. Louis, they've lost defenseman Carlo Koliakovo for 2 weeks after he got hit by a shot near the eye. You know, the Blues are sort of, you know, we've talked about the Blues a lot. They're
now
in 11th. They can't score.
Yep.
You know, they're not as good as Montreal at keeping the puck out of their net, but, I mean, you know.
They were, but they've really tanked out.
Halleck is 17th. no longer, you know, what he was at the beginning of the year, but that's not his fault. The defense is also, you know, thin, as it were, and this certainly doesn't help them. I mean, you know, Carlo Koliakovo, he had high hopes in Toronto for years upon years, never really fulfilled his promise. You know, what has he done? What has he brought to St. Louis? And now, what are the Blues? What are the Blues losing out on?
Let's not overstate his injury, Drew. I mean, he's a good puck mover. He can move the puck pretty well. He's a pretty good skater. But he's never been the stalwart defensively. And this is a team that needs goal scoring. So in that sense, you know, he hurts in terms of his puck movement. But the biggest loss there right now, and they just got Oshie back. But the biggest loss there is that David Perron still hasn't returned. He started lightly skating, but it sounds like we got a David Booth situation on our hands here, and he might be out for the year. And that's a huge injury because we've talked about a number of times on this show, as he, you know, David Backes is their leading scorer, and I love David Backes' game, but he's not a natural, you know, top goal scorer, and there's a lack of a top guy to rely on there. And this team is 21st in the National Hockey League in created offense in terms of goals for per game. If you're 17th in goals against, you'd be 21st in goals for.
No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, it does. You can be that, and then you're going to be 11th or 12th in the Western Conference.
That's right.
Yeah, and St. Louis is still in there. I mean, they're in the playoff race, but that's one of the teams that I personally am expecting to fall off, just for that reason. They can't compete with the higher scoring teams in their divisions.
Well, they're
in their division, like the Detroits, and you know, they've gotten this far by keeping it close. And
now, they have a load of cap space. They got $12 million in cap space to spend here. A cap geek tells us that. So the question is, will they add?
Who's out there that they're going to add?
Everybody they try and sneak through waivers gets claimed by another team.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll talk about that quickly. John Davidson obviously wants to see that rule change, but Doug Armstrong was a little bit frustrated, would be the right word. A little bit frustrated.
Kyle Wellwood.
Not so much that he was claimed, but that David Poile ended up calling Doug Armstrong to tell him, hey, I'm claiming Merrick Svatos. Apparently Doug Wilson didn't call Doug Armstrong to tell him he was claiming Kyle Wellwood. In fact, Kyle Wellwood actually practiced with the team that morning.
And found out.
Armstrong was a little bit frustrated that Wilson didn't have the courtesy to call him.
Fine, common courtesy maybe, but who cares?
I'm with Armstrong on that one. I think you should call.
Really?
No, I mean, that's...
The legwork is done by St. Louis
here. In that situation, Kyle Wellwood, it didn't work out for him in Vancouver, And he Kyle Wellwood, it's clear that he wanted back in the NHL, and he's still young enough that he still can make an NHL career out of him. You know, he can make something out of himself in the NHL. And I agree. I mean, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth through that one. Because you put the work in signing him, and you bring him in for practice.
Exactly. Well, but you always knew that's your risk.
Yeah, I understand that, Drew, but I don't know. I think you just you have to call.
Okay, fine. I mean, I disagree, but whatever. We mentioned it earlier in the show. The real scary one, the Avalanche forward Thomas Fleischmann, out for the rest of the season with two blood clots, one in each lung. You know.
Scary.
Scary. Yeah, I mean, that one is fortunate where they caught it early enough, but definitely scary.
Yeah, he was having trouble breathing. They went to the doctor, and that's what they've discovered. They think he'll be fine. He just has to go on blood thinners, and health is first and foremost there. They're obviously going to miss him on the ice, and that's one of the reasons Forsberg... He probably would have been brought into the fold anyways, but he certainly, you know, tries to fill that gap. Fleischmann's almost been a point of game since going to Colorado. And again, when we talked about Greg Sherman, one of the three things I learned last week, this guy is one of the most underrated general managers. But most importantly, Fleischmann's health is the issue here, and it seems like he'll be okay, and that's what's most important.
Yeah, I mean, you catch it exactly. His health is...
Not a broken leg, right?
No, his health is the most important. What does it mean for the Avs?
Well, if Forsberg obviously not going to be able to play every game. If he can slide in there, it doesn't really mean it's not
that. That's a hell of an upgrade to get Peter Forsberg.
Right, but what does it mean in the scheme of things? Obviously, you know, since they got Fleischmann, Chris Stewart really hasn't been playing. So,
and
overall,
Peter Mueller hasn't played at all.
Right. Overall, it hurts them, of course. But this team has a lot of young talent there, so it'll definitely take them down a slight notch. But I think they can make up for it.
It'll be interesting. I mean, Fleischmann's a UFA after this season.
If he's healthy, they'll re-sign him.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting. I mean, now that the guy sort of was expecting a payday after this year, and then all of a sudden now he's got this health concern that teams are going to be a little bit wary of.
He's not thinking of payday right now. He's thinking of his health. I mean, that's long.
And the way he's flourished, though, in Colorado, wouldn't you want to stay there?
I would think so. Yeah. But who knows? But I would think so.
What a young town in Colorado.
Yeah.
Exciting team to watch. If you get a chance to watch their games, if you have center ice, watch their games.
Yeah.
Stasny and Duchesne and
TJ Gagliardi.
TJ Gagliardi,
Brian
and Chris Stewart.
Nobody else is watching their game, so you might as well watch them because they are playing an exciting brand of hockey.
Mitski's a beautiful skater, too.
Another injury, Florida Panthers defenseman Brian McCabe out 4 to 6 weeks after another guy getting hit in the face with a puck. We know that the Panthers aren't going anywhere anytime soon, but what is this, just, again, it makes a question. Why do you? Why aren't you wearing a visor?
We're not getting into this visor thing anymore, Drew. They don't want to wear a visor. They're not wearing a visor. I don't feel that bad for them.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we have Zach on the line. He's calling from Toronto. He wants to talk about the Coyotes deal. So let's go to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we have Zach on the line, and we got news and notes and still more interviews. You got lots to come here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned. Top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. We just heard from Andrew Gross.
I have to spend two more hours with you guys?
You don't have to. You can leave.
Hexel can sit in that seat, keep it warm.
That was awkward, Richard.
Well, you can lose your spot right away. She was here.
Oh, you're saying we can replace Ezra with Leah Hextall.
You know, I'd spent 2 hours with
him. What else was I saying?
I don't know. I was a little confused about what you were saying exactly. Anyways, before we get to news and notes, we have Zach on line one. He's calling from Toronto to talk about the Coyote situation.
Zach,
welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Zach. Thanks for joining us there, 11 a.m. In Toronto. Zach, you've been after us on Twitter for the last couple of days to talk about the Coyotes situation. I assume you're talking about the editorial that appeared in the Arizona Republic and various articles saying that the bond sale is going into the tank. You know, what do you think about the Coyotes situation right now?
Well, the thing that really caught my eye was that press release, that the statement that Glendale released yesterday.
Yeah, did you see that? I did, and we'll put it up on www.illegalcurve.com in case anybody missed it. It was a statement that appeared in the Arizona Republic. Really, they were almost begging and whimpering that the Goldwater Institute not file suit over this ridiculous deal that they've signed.
Yeah, and it just seems to me that Glendale is just beginning the process of sort of putting, you know, the blame of this whole thing falling apart, potentially. They're just sort of positioning Glendale to be the scapegoat for that so that, you know, the mayor and the city councilors don't look too bad politically in this whole thing, but I don't know if that's possible.
Well, they already look foolish for agreeing to the deal, so I think, you know, a fool and their money will soon part is a pretty apt expression in this case.
People have to realize that as much as people think this deal may be done, not necessarily, and in fact, I think it's far from it.
Yeah, Gary Lawless wrote about it in the Free Press yesterday also, saying that, I mean, this house of cards that they've built is really reliant on this bond sale. And if anybody knows anything about the financial market, especially in the United States right now, the bond market has gone into the tank. So they're trying to sell $130 million worth of bonds, and nobody wants to buy them. And, I mean, I don't know how... It sounds like the sale is reliant on those bonds being sold. And if it doesn't happen, they could this could fall apart within the next month to 6 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. Now, of course, you know, people in Winnipeg... Deep breaths, everybody. Let's not go a little bit haywire, but it's still a long way from being done there in Glendale.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to ask you guys about was something that I think everybody's forgetting about. You know, so the Phoenix had that December 31st deadline, whatever, to sell the team. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, they had that lease agreement and everything was good, you know, around the middle of December. But that, you know, that soft deadline came and went.
Yeah.
So... Glendale's got $25 million sitting in an escrow account for the NHL to draw from to cover the losses for the Coyotes this year. So do you think it's possible now that the NHL is starting to pull that cash out now that that deadline has come and gone, and that's sort of causing some stress and, you know, a little overreaction from Glendale as they realize that this thing is not as strong as they thought it was going to be?
Well, I think that the NHL, I mean... I have no doubt whatsoever that the NHL is taking every penny of that $25 million and using it to fund this team this year. There's no doubt about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't have demanded that escrow without it. I think that what you're really seeing, you know, in this case is that the city of Glendale just doesn't have the capital financially to get this deal done. Nobody wants. I mean, everybody sees it for a bad deal. You know, maybe with the exception of the mayor, and I mean, who knows what she's. What straws she's grasping onto, but everybody sees this as the one of the worst deals ever agreed to for a taxpayer. And I mean, I still don't understand why the people of Glendale really aren't in more of a revolt.
It's funny when you look at the comments sometimes on the Arizona Republic there, and you'll see comments, you know, always be the Winnipegger coming in there being like, just get the team out of here. But then you'll actually see the infighting between Glendale residents and Phoenix Coyotes fans saying, hey, you may be a fan of the Coyotes, but this is costing us a ton of money. It makes no financial sense.
Yeah,
that's a logic speaking, but will logic prevail in this situation? And if it does prevail, then the team won't be there anymore.
Well, Zach, I think you have a right to wonder kind of what's going on, because obviously everyone in Winnipeg and across the hockey world is a little bit skeptical now, because we thought the sale was inevitable. Now it looks like the fact that the Glendale City Council has to work with the Arizona government to sell these bonds, and I mean, you know, none of us here are finance guys. Michael Remus is an accounting guy, but... If they can't sell these bonds to residents, well, there is no deal, because that is where the money is coming from. So, I mean, obviously the main thing here looking forward is this going to happen, and is the sale going to go through? And right now it's not final, right?
Zach, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Keep listening.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, Zach. Okay, and quickly want to mention the Atlanta issue.
Yeah, the Atlanta issue. God bless them in Atlanta. They're equally dysfunctional. The ownership group, after they finally settled their 7-year-long lawsuit, the new owners of the team are now engaging in yet another lawsuit against their former law firm, saying that the reason they haven't been able to sell this team, and they've been trying to sell this team for the last 6 years, they said in the court papers, is because the law firm put in a poorly written clause into the agreement.
It was poorly written if you read the article.
Okay, Richard Lawyer.
No, but it was. I mean, they didn't have a third option. They talked about this first option, second option in terms of valuing, and then they just didn't have, they left it, it was very, not only broad, it was just an oversight, I think, on their part, and for a big firm obviously handling a huge case like this, it was a fairly significant mistake.
Yeah. So what you're going to see, what the important part of that is that we finally have confirmation, what we've known all along, is that the Atlanta Thrashers, for the last 6 or 7 years, the ownership has been trying to sell that franchise.
The funny contrast, of course, was all the quotes that they had saying they were going to sell, and then everything in the lawsuit says that they were going to sell it.
That's right.
So don't always believe what you hear.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a very good article coming out of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, pretty much saying that the owners are a bunch of liars. You know, they've been saying that they've been, well, we're committed to Atlanta for the, they've been saying they're committed to Atlanta for the last 6 or 7 years, when in actuality they've been trying to sell the franchise, and, you know, they wouldn't have cared who to sell to. They wanted to just get their money and get out. Anyways, let's move on to news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
The big story, and we should come to a resolution hopefully before we're off air this morning. The Detroit Red Wings signed Evgeny Nabokov to a one-year $570,000 deal. That contract is prorated for the rest of the remainder of the season. So you're really talking about paying him, you know, maybe $350,000 for the remainder of the year. But because Nabokov started the year in the KHL and played in the KHL, he now has to clear waivers. And
we're going to find out in the next hour or two. If
the waiver process is over at 11 o'clock Winnipeg time. Hopefully we'll get an announcement shortly thereafter as to everybody is expecting that somebody is going to put in a claim for Evgeny Nabokov. The question will be, you know, who's going to put in a claim for Nabokov?
And why would you put in a claim?
Keeping in mind that you cannot put in a claim for him and then easily trade him back to Detroit for a draft pick or anything.
Well, his contract is so minimal, Drew. Why wouldn't you put in a claim? Why would you let Detroit get this guy?
Who's putting in a claim for him, Richie, right now?
I think more than a few teams will put in a claim for Evgeny Nabokov, to be honest with you.
I mean,
below Detroit in the standings, first off.
How can multiple teams put in a claim? I thought once you put in a claim...
You have 24 hours to put
no
in a claim.
There's no bidding process.
No, let me finish. You have 24 hours to put in a claim. As many teams can put in a claim as they want, he is awarded to the team with the lowest winning percentage the day he gets put on waivers. So if right now...
Oilers.
The
Oilers aren't going to claim him.
If the New Jersey Devils put in a claim for him, because the...
Lamoriello's already said they're not putting in a claim for him.
Let me finish. I'm saying as the worst team in the NHL, if the New Jersey Devils had put in a claim for him and 12 other teams had put in a claim for him, the Devils would be assigned Evgeny Nabokov.
And it's not a cap issue, Drew. The guy's going to be making like $200,000 for the remainder of the year. Remember, he had a .922 save percentage last year. He has a .912 career save percentage.
Save percentage,
save
percentage.
Do you know how much better he is than a lot of the goalies in the National Hockey League? I mean, he's certainly better than almost every backup in the National Hockey League, and he could be a starter. So you look at where Detroit is. Detroit's third overall in the National Hockey League standings right now. He's got to go through 27 teams
to get to him. Playoff success for Nabokov.
Doesn't matter.
He beat Detroit.
It doesn't matter.
He beat Detroit last year, though.
You don't want Detroit getting him. If you're Chicago, you put in a claim for him with no second thoughts.
What team to put in a claim? Yeah, Chicago. Exactly. Exactly right, Drew.
There won't be a claim on him.
I think there will be.
What about San Jose?
Sure. Any team would put in the claim for him and to avoid...
San Jose wasn't going to sign him because of the money he wanted. I don't necessarily think they wanted to cut ties for sure there.
Now he doesn't make any... Any team that is below Detroit and potentially...
What about Columbus, guys?
They need a goaltender, desperately.
If all these teams wanted him, why wouldn't they sign him to a
contract? Because they have to go through waivers and then they won't get him.
Maybe he wouldn't sign with them. You don't know that,
You don't know that either. Yeah. He also has the option, if whatever team puts in the claim for him, he doesn't want to go
if
there.
If San Jose puts in a claim for him, that's foolish. They should have re-signed him if they wanted.
I'll tell you a couple teams I think would put in a claim for him. Washington's one. Chicago.
Washington? They have three good goalies.
Washington's one. Chicago is two.
Chicago, to me, jumps out at me as a huge possibility.
San Jose is three.
Braden Holtby is better than that.
And Columbus is four. Those four teams are the ones I think would claim him. I don't think anybody else would claim
him. Why wouldn't anybody else claim him for the $200,000 it cost you as a backup goaltender?
Who's
Anaheim's backup goaltender?
McElhenney.
Would you rather have Curtis McElhenney or would you have Evgeny Nabokov?
I agree, but my point is, if you have Hiller going to be your franchise goaltender for the foreseeable future, and you can develop a younger guy behind him in limited action, why would you sign Nabokov?
Have you watched Curtis McElhenney play goal for the Calgary Flames for the last couple of years?
If you're going anywhere, Drew, Hiller's going to play almost all the games anyways, and he's significantly, not significantly, but he's better than
Nabokov. I'm not disputing that point.
He is significantly better.
Is there a possibility, if Nabokov gets claimed by a team he doesn't want to go to, do you see him saying no and sitting out the remainder of the year? That's an option he has.
Yeah, I mean, sure, he'll do that. He could do that, but I don't think he will.
So then why wouldn't you go be... Why do you say there's only four or five teams?
There's nobody else, Drew, I think, would actually claim the guy.
Who's Colorado's backup goaltender? Peter Budaj? Do you want a new Nabokov $100,000? Or do you want Peter Budaj at, I don't know, probably more than $200,000?
Okay, Drew, you really have to stop asking the question, does a team want Nabokov? I think... I'm actually shocked that this story has gained so much momentum. Yes, Nabokov was a very good goalie for the Sharks.
Why are you shocked?
I think there was a... Well, if he was that good, why didn't the Sharks re-sign him? There was a reason.
Money.
Yeah, he wanted too much money. Now money is not an issue anymore.
So, Drew, I don't think it was just money.
Well, I agree that is. Because well,
I really think any other team would have signed him if it was about something other than money.
If you have
Budaj flops in the playoffs. He sucks in the playoffs, and I think that.
I agree, Ezzy.
That's part of Nabokov.
He's
a regular season goalie.
And if you're Columbus
and you need to get to the playoffs,
that's fine.
Columbus isn't getting to the playoffs.
If you have Budaj in a one-way contract, why would you sign him and have to eat the money? How much better is Nabokov than Budaj playing 10 games?
Why would you want to eat money? Get sick from that.
There's only 35 games left in the season. Why would you pick up a guy who's going to play 5 games for you and then eat a one-way contract? These owners are not going to look to eat money like that.
Well, I just think that he could be an upgraded over so many teams.
Four teams. San Jose, Washington, Columbus.
See, Washington, I don't agree with. You've got Neuwirth, you've got Varlamov, and then Holtby's been good when he's come.
Right, but you might want a veteran goalie and then ride the youngster and push the youngster. And maybe Navikov as a Russian with Varlamov would be a nice compliment.
What about backing up Carey Price? You have Alex Auld there.
No, see, right, what you do there is you undermine Price's confidence.
Exactly.
If you go in there and you immediately tell Carey Price, he is our backup goaltender.
Matter.
If we learned anything from Leah Hexall coming on the show, that undermined my confidence. No, I'm just kidding, Leah. But you did a great job. But honestly, I think we need to calm down. I mean, that must have been a trending topic on Twitter 2 days ago when the news came out. Nabokov, we're making him out to be the best goaltender of all time, and his return is... I don't know. I think
he's a top-flight NHL regular season goaltender. And you don't get top-flight NHL regular season goaltenders.
They don't grow on trees, Drew.
No, you don't get them for $200,000. You don't get him for $200,000, and here he is. He's sitting in your lap, and you can avoid your main rival, potentially Stanley Cup contender, from getting their goalie that they want.
That's why Chicago makes the most sense. And you look at Chicago's cap situation, and you see, okay, Chicago's cap situation is not favorable. They have $327,000 approximately, but he's not even signed for that much. And the thing is you could fiddle around a little bit of money if you had to.
It's funny, Marty Turco and Evgeny Nabokov as your goalies. What is this, 2003?
Yeah.
I mean, Nabokov at least has had regular season success. Marty Turco hasn't had any regular season success in the last number of years. Let's go to break.
Well, he's been average.
Let's go to break and answer this question. Who puts in the claim for Nabokov?
Nobody.
I think Chicago.
And you think nobody? You think he goes to Detroit?
I don't know if anybody will, but I don't think anybody should.
Chicago.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, statistically speaking, you're listening to the Eagle Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. AM. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. Coming up in 15 minutes time, Mark Stepneski of ESPNDallas.com will be joining us to talk about the Dallas Stars. Coming up a little later in the show, we still have James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail talking about the Leafs, and we have Bill Hoppe of the Olean Times Herald talking about the Buffalo Sabres. It's time for Statistically Speaking. Let's start with Danny Briere, all-star player Danny Briere. He's the fourth most efficient even-strength point producer in the NHL this season. I think that's an underrated stat that people don't really look at as much. Even-strength points, even-strength goals. That means your five are better than the five you're playing against.
That's right, and most of the games played at even-strength, as people obviously know, and that takes into account ice time. And Danny Briere is probably having one of the more underrated seasons in the NHL this year. That's why we picked up the stat, because he just got added to the All-Star team after the injury to Crosby.
No, Iginla withdrawing so he can spend time with his grandmother.
But Briere not being on the team in the first place is criminal, because based on his play, he's been one of the top players in the National Hockey League, and he's got a big contract, and that's obviously been talked about as being an issue in Philadelphia, considering that their cap management's generally been very good with the Richards and Carter reasonable deals that they've signed. But Briere performing at this level right now makes that contract far more reasonable. And that line, as you talked about, the line that he plays on has been dominant.
I love that line. And just to quickly mention this, for those who didn't see the article that was written, Philly was in Ottawa recently and they hammered them. Alan Panzeri of the Ottawa Citizen wrote an article about Briere and, talking about how he went through a divorce last year and that affected his play. And now he's really happy to be on top of his game. So check out that article if you have a chance.
I'm sure Remus will pull it up.
But you are right. Briere is a fantastic hockey player in 5-on-5, and he makes his line mates better, and he's back to the level where he was at 2 years ago. And, Briere was amazing. He led. Did he not lead the league in points last year in the playoffs, or he was close? If he didn't lead the league, then he was close in the playoffs.
I'll check it right now.
But he was on fire, and you know, that's an important stat because Philly, in my mind, is the most complete team. You can make the argument Philly or Vancouver right now. But yeah. five on five. I mean, there aren't many teams that can skate with them, Rich. And last year we talked about this, how in certain games of that Eastern Conference, Philly was in their zone the entire game.
Led the playoffs in scoring last year, 30 points in 23 games. Ezzie.
Nice call, Ezzie. Well done. Yeah.
Well, people forget about that. I mean, it's significant. I mean, people think Taves, Kane, Richards. But Briere was there, and they were all, remember, Giroux was third or fourth in the league in scoring, too.
They were 2, 3, 4. Sharp was 5, Giroux was 6, Briere was 1.
Well, like you know what you're talking about, Ezzie. Nicely done. Yep. And of course, 780-1290 is the phone number. That's 780-1290 if you want to get in and talk about really anything in the hockey world, even though it's statistically speaking. We'll listen to what you're saying. Moving on in this segment, Patrick Kaleta of the Buffalo Sabres is the most efficient at drawing penalties in the NHL this season while at even strength.
Again, that's important because by drawing penalties, obvious statement, you create power plays, and power plays create goals. So, you know, if you're performing at 20%, every 5 penalties you draw, you get a goal for your team. That means a lot. His worth is far more than I think he's being paid. Having said that, I mean, we should mention that he got injured last night with the wrist
injury.
Right.
And we'll talk to Bill Hoppe about that.
But Gabriel Desjardins, who's going to be on the show hopefully monthly in terms of our statistically speaking segment, has touted his ability to draw penalties and the undervaluing around the NHL of that kind of talent and that commodity. And Kaleta continues, as he did last year, to draw penalties. And if he can do that, that's why the Sabres continue to re-sign him. He's a pest. He's annoying, but he does the job. And in the NHL, when you can create power plays in a team, in a league that's very reliant on special teams, you're a valuable commodity.
Is he more than a pest? Is he dirty?
You know, maybe he's on the line, and he crosses it from time to time. But hey.
If he's resulting in his team scoring a goal every 5 penalties that somebody against him,
that's right.
then he is valuable. Third stat that we're going to go through is sort of a, you know, think about it back in school. You know, if you got a 40%, but the average in class was a 50%, they graded you on a curve.
The bell curve.
Yes.
And this is from behindthenet.ca, by the way.
This is from Gabriel Desjardins' site. Plus minus relative to the team, the top 5 in order. Steve Stamkos. Is that Tony Lidman?
Right.
Tony Lidman, Brian Campbell, Ryan Whitney, and Martin St. Louis. You know, you dig this. What are your thoughts on this relative to the team? These are teams with high plus minuses for the most part, and these players have high plus minuses
Ryan Whitney.
Okay.
Everybody's a minus on that team.
Okay, so.
But it takes into account, it balances it out. We can get into the details of it with Gabe next time he's on. But I think a couple of things here. One of the biggest things is guys like Ludman and Campbell and Whitney are very high relative to their team plus minuses, because a plus minus stat as it is, you know, just plain is to me fairly useless. Those guys are probably going to see a little bit of a downturn because they're getting a little bit lucky in terms of a couple of things. But the two ones that stand out are Stamkos and St. Louis. These guys are driving the play in the right direction. They are scoring. They are keeping the puck out of the, you know, out of their own end. They're doing everything right. Both of them right now should be considered for the most valuable player in the NHL. You know, if Crosby continues to stay to be hurt, then Stamkos and St. Louis both should be getting consideration for the Hart Trophy. Crosby obviously healthy gets it clearly, but those two guys, look at these stats amongst many other stats that they are, you know, they're ranked highly in.
The most fascinating part about Stamkos and St. Louis, I mean, Stamkos is a plus 11 right now, and St. Louis is a plus 5.
So this is why we provide the relative to the team, because
everybody else on that team, with the exception of Steve Downey, who's a plus 2.
Mm-hmm. Downey's plus 2, right, Drew? Because he plays on that line when he's healthy.
Sure, exactly. He's only played 33 games. Everybody else on that team is a minus. So, I mean, it really does go to show you there how porous the defense there on Tampa Bay is.
Well, and maybe not so much the defense as it is the goaltending, right?
Well, that's fine, the goaltending. But, I mean, every defenseman that they have on that team, you know, that's played significant time, with the exception of Matt Smeby, who's played 20 games and has a plus 1. Every defenseman on that team is a minus. So it is somewhat amazing that this team is second in the Eastern Conference.
Looking at the plain stat, which I think is fairly useless, but looking at the plain stat, and to be a plus on a team with goaltending that's been below 90%, is tremendous.
In terms of a save percentage. And, Rolson is, he's only played a few games for them, but he's at a 9.14.
We're going to keep delving into these stats week by week to give you a better idea of kind of what's going on behind the stats, essentially. And NHL.com will give you some plain stats. We're going to go deeper into them and provide you more, you know, with more information that's out there and that we think is valuable and insightful.
you know, we may you know, annoy some of the traditionalists, but these are sort of that's the battle that's going on in sports, really.
Doesn't have to be that way, Drew.
I know it doesn't have to be, but that's sort of the way it is. Is that there's this battle now between the sort of the new age stats.
You're a traditionalist.
I'm a bit more of a traditionalist. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, the reason I'm a traditionalist, who has this much time to figure out all these numbers and all these stats and everything else?
Throw me under the bus, Drew?
Well, I'm not throwing
you. Drew, for example, us?
Well, no. I mean, maybe you, Ezzy, but, you know, I know why you do it, Richie. I mean, you're a big stat guy and you like it. And, I mean, this is a good plug for you and your puck prospectus and your
hockey
ESPN. Hockey prospectus. It formerly was puck prospectus.
Maybe Richie will correct me wrong. I wouldn't even say that you're a big stats guy. I think you respect stats. I wouldn't say you're a big stats. Like, I mean,
I think it's bad.
You like stats. I mean, you include them in your research, but you're an academic, so you include them and you back them up.
Something
like that.
Okay.
No, but I understand. I absolutely understand what you're saying. You're starting to substantiate things, and that's how you want to do it. I absolutely agree.
I think it's in hockey.
Doesn't have to be
sometimes. Debate. Sometimes people stats are great. I mean, they're fun. I mean, really, when you look at stats, it's just nice. Everyone always references stats, and even though you like to use qualitative characteristics when you're describing hockey players.
It's true.
Well, it's true. I mean, numbers back it up. I mean, a guy like Yuri Hudler has all the talent, all the beautiful skating and stick handling in the world. He's got, 15, 20 points? So, mm-hmm. I mean, really, that's at the end of the day, it's about goals and assists and wins and losses. But I think, Drew, you know, if I know where you're going with this, I think that there is a lot of, you know, stats 2.0 out there in that they're breaking down, like, it's like the old baseball thing where they would tell you if a pitcher can throw to right-handed batters on a rainy day in a park.
Baseball
an
is easier
park.
To quantify, Ezzy, because right. everything is you know, every play is its own.
It's either right. a yay or a nay
but,
play.
But I think,
for example, I think
time on ice and quality of and plus minus and that really gives you an indication of a player's worth. It really does because it tells you.
I think time on ice definitely does because you're not going to put a player who's
but also
who's
time on ice,
junk.
But whether it's a plus or a minus
sure.
shift, right?
Yeah.
Because it tells you. What is a guy doing out there? And a guy like Alexei Kovalev, I mean, he has had the goals and assists over his career, but lately, the reason why he's gone down as far as value and
because you're a faster skater than he is.
He doesn't do anything
and
on the ice.
And Ezzy doesn't have a knee.
I mean, you can't hide anymore what you do on the ice. And I mean, the fact is, a lot of guys will put up numbers, but really. Is it really showing his true value because he goes through 10-game periods where he does nothing?
Or he gets a ton of ice time and he gets points, and at the end of the year he's got the same as the guy who got half the ice time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Last stat before we go to break. Matt Cook leads the NHL in minor penalties with 30. This is also another guy who plays on the edge.
Well,
is he hurting his team more than helping?
Yeah, 30 penalties hurting your team. I mean, let's 30 penalties on a team that... you know, is fairly undisciplined. He has to cut down. And again, we've talked about this before. We talked about it last week or the week before. Pittsburgh has to stop taking so many minor penalties, including Matt Cook, because Matt Cook's game is not good enough to make up for those penalties. You know, if you're like Corey Perry's up there, top five in minor penalties, yeah, Corey Perry's got to cut down on it, but Corey Perry's going to give you 35, 40 goals and 80 to 90 points. Matt Cook's going to give you 30 points. If he's taking more minor penalties and he's got points, he's hurting your team.
I'm curious because, you know, you look at Coletta. And he's a guy.
An interesting article, actually. Minor penalties and point correlation. Hey, let me write that down.
Here.
You just blind.
But that's the thing about Cook that I'd be interested in is how many penalties does he draw at the same time? You know, he takes a ton, but is he like Coletta where he's also drawing other players into taking penalties?
Yes,
and
Matt
putting
Cook,
his team on
Matt,
the power play?
Matt Cook is a drawer, if you will.
But is he though? I'm curious.
Yes,
about
he draws
stats.
Penalties. He definitely
well, we
draws
think
penalties.
That he, we know that he gets.
Why don't we check into
skin?
That and get into after? We'll
get back into that.
I want to say one thing here about Matt Cook in Pittsburgh though. Pittsburgh, for some reason, is always at the top of the league in penalty kill though. Their power play, for some reason, it mystifies us as to why their power play. They have a really bad power play, and they even had a bad power play with Gonchar. But Pittsburgh can kill off the penalties. When they need to, so I'm not saying that Cook should continue to take them, but at least they have a good penalty kill.
Yeah, but you don't want
to. You're pushing the limits, Ezzy.
And another guy, I can't back this up with the stat this year. Pronger takes a lot of minor penalties.
Yeah, but and
he
that,
always has.
But again, like Corey Perry.
Yeah.
If Chris Pronger, you play 30 minutes a game, you're the best shutdown defenseman in the National Hockey League, arguably.
Chris Pronger
can afford to do it.
That's right. Where Matt Cook, you know, the problem is, you know. Yeah, I mean, he's hurting the team way more than he's helping him, because Pronger can then go and shut everybody down. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mark Stanesky of ESPNDallas.com will be joining us to talk about the Dallas Stars. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.